Blog Talk Radio.
Hope everybody's doing well. We're talking Donald Trump today. This should be a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to this. Feel free to call in if you have an opinion about Trump. And I have a feeling that pretty much everybody listening to this show has an opinion about Trump. Like him, hate him, lots of opinions, lots of emotion. This should be a lot of fun. Let me start off with a disclaimer, because I have to do this, unfortunately. I don't take political positions. I'm not endorsing a candidate. I'm not anti any candidates. I don't have, any position about this election as the executive director of the Ayn Rand Institute. Certainly personally I do. So anything I say here, pro-Trump, against Trump, is not a reflection of my political views. Have to do that, sorry. But, the Ayn Rand Institute is a 501c3 organization, and as such, the IRS prohibits us from taking explicitly or even implicitly political positions, So we're going to try to analyze Trump objectively. Right, we're going to treat this objectively, and we're not going to try to say, I'm not going to tell you to vote for him or not to vote for him. We're going to try to come out and say, to what extent does Trump reflect the kind of values that I stand for, that I think many of you on the show listening stand for? There might be people listening to the show today who don't agree with some of my views or some of Ayn Rand's views. We might be appealing to a broader audience today. We'll see. But the point is, we're going to try to understand Donald Trump's appeal. Certainly, lots of people like Donald Trump. I think right now, one has to assume that Donald Trump is going to be the Republican nominee for president. I don't see who's going to beat him. I don't see what the dynamics are going to be that would beat him. He seems to be able to say anything, and he doesn't get the kind of the negative that one would expect, that if anybody else said it, he would get. So he is the front runner, and he is likely to win. So I think it's important to try to understand, because I think there are real big implications to Donald Trump's popularity, to Donald Trump's success, that we need to understand. We need to understand it in terms of, does it reflect anything positive, or does it reflect anything negative? What does it reflect about the American people? What can we learn from? What can future candidates learn from it? What does this say about the direction the United States of America is heading in? And does it say anything positive? Does it say negative? So we're going to try to be very objective about this. We're going to try to really sit down and analyze the phenomena. And it is a phenomena of Donald Trump. There is something going on in this country that is unique, that is different, and that is new. And I think it's really, really important to understand it. Last night, Fox News did an hour-long special about voter rebellion, and they basically put Trump and Bernie Sanders as the primary examples of this voter rebellion. But they also included Cruz and Black Lives Matter and a bunch of other things to suggest that this election was going to be very different than previous elections. And I agree with them. I think something is happening in American politics. Something is happening that is different than previous elections. And I think we talked about Bernie Sanders last week. And those of you who haven't listened to the Bernie Sanders show, I highly recommend it. It was a good show. And we analyzed Bernie Sanders as we're going to do Donald Trump. But I think these are the two most important characters. These are the two most important characters in this election, and it's important that we understand them. They are clearly Trump is clearly leading the Republican polls, and we'll see how Bernie does on the Democratic side. But I think he has a real shot. He has a real shot at winning the Democratic nomination. So imagine a general election where the choice is between Trump and Sanders. You know, this could be a real reality that we're going to have to deal with very soon here. So it's important to understand the facts and to understand who these candidates are and what they represent. Okay, well, let's start with our analysis of Donald Trump. And I want to start, to try with an attempt to understand his appeal. What positives does Donald Trump represent? What is it about the Donald Trump candidacy that is appealing to so many people and appealing to a lot of intelligent people? It's a variety of different people who are attracted to the Donald Trump campaign. It's again, interesting and important to understand why. Okay, let's start. So what is the one thing? What is the one thing? And I wish I had a live audience because I'd love to see your reactions and I'd love to see hands going up and people actually responding live to this. But what is the one thing that appeals, I think, most to the public about Donald Trump? I think it's the fact, I think it's the fact that he's not a politician, that he says whatever comes to his mind. That is, he's not playing any kind of politically correct game. He's not trying to be PC. He's not trying to play people. I mean, I think he is trying to play people, but in a different sense. People don't get that he's trying to play with him. He just says it, right? He just says it. He's not a politician. He's not a politician. Partially that's reflected in the fact that he doesn't play this politically correct game. And partially it's reflected in the fact that he's not trying to, people don't get the sense that he's trying to, manipulate certain groups or curry favor with certain political constituencies. Now, he's doing that. But he doesn't give the sense that he is. Somebody on the chat says he's a masterful speaker. Let me tell you, he's an awful speaker. By any objective standard, this guy is an awful speaker. Actually read one of his speeches sometimes. He says absolutely nothing. We'll get to this later. He says absolutely nothing over and over and over and over again. He speaks, though. You get a sense of sincerity. You get a sense of Donald Trump is actually saying what Donald Trump actually thinks. And that is unbelievably unusual. Right? Most politicians, you get a sense, and you got this from Marco Rubio's last debate appearance, you get a sense that everything they say is canned. Everything they say is prepped. Everything they say, they repeat. They don't answer questions. You don't get any sense of spontaneity from them. What you get from them is what they prepped, the canned response. And with Donald Trump, you get a sense that he's saying what he really thinks. And I think he does. And when he rambles on and on and on in his talks, in his speeches, you can tell that because it's not canned. This is not prepared. He's got a few points that he wants to say, but because it's rambling, his speeches are complete and utter ramblings. And he plays the crowd. And he knows how to play the crowd. That's what makes him, in a sense, that's the one thing that makes him a good speaker, is that he knows how to relate to the crowd. He responds to the crowd. He's engaged with his audience. He's engaged with the audience. He responds to their questions in the middle of speeches. He responds to their laughter. He responds to their applause. He plays off of them. And that is very appealing. You know, good speakers, and in a sense, he's a good speaker. The content is meaningless, but in terms of what he, how he relates to the to the audience, he is a great speaker, and he gets the audience engaged. Now, I can't watch him. I turn him off after a minute because he's saying nothing, and it's obvious that he's saying nothing. But reading his speech. And watching him a few times because, you know, you have to, the sacrifices I have to make to do this show, some of them involve actually reading speeches by Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders and actually watching them speak. And watching is much more painful than reading their speeches. So he says things like they are, and he talks common people's language. Doesn't use sophisticated words. He actually says in his speech, you know, that he went to an Ivy League school, and he did. But he doesn't sound like a guy who's gone to an Ivy League school. He sounds like an average guy, and people relate to that. He's not trying to talk over their heads. He talks to the audience. He talks to average people. He doesn't talk academic speak. So he's plain spoken. He talks people's language. He's not a sleazy, manipulative politician who's got canned stuff to say. And then he's non-PC. He just says it. He says stuff. Now, he says awful, ridiculous stuff often, off the cuff. He says stupid stuff often, and he almost never apologizes for what he says. But he says it, and people respect the fact that he says it. And you know, you have to respect the fact that he's not playing games. And, you know, and he gets away with it. He gets away with saying unbelievable stuff, and yet he gets away with it, right? Nobody calls him on it, or when he's called on it, when the media calls on it, when the so-called Republican establishment calls him on it, people don't care. People just don't care, because what they value is the fact that he speaks his mind. And this tells you a lot, I think, about the state of American politics. It tells you a lot about the state of American intellectuals. The fact that Donald Trump is not an intellectual, doesn't speak intellectualese, you know, doesn't speak in intellectual terms, is hugely respected by the people, but this never used to be the case. It used to be that at least some politicians were admired. Them being sophisticated and smart and intellectual, was viewed as a positive thing, but no more. Because people are sick and tired of being lied to, of having politicians tell them that they'll do X and not doing it, by having politicians tell them that if they do X, Y will happen, and they do X and Y doesn't happen. They're tired of intellectuals hating America, dissing America. They're tired of the Obamas of the world telling them how pathetic this country is. Notice that the one phrase that Trump says over and over and over again is that this country will be the greatest country in the world, that it'll be great. And that's what people want to hear. In that sense, he reminds them of Ronald Reagan, although Ronald Reagan was far, 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 far more articulate and far more clear about what he meant of American being great. Well, you know, one of my criticisms of Trump is, what does he even mean by America being great? What does that mean? So Trump doesn't play games. Well, again, he plays games, but we'll get to the kind of games he plays. They're not the typical games. He calls it like it is, at least like he sees it. It's not actually like it is, but like he sees it. He says what he wants to say. I mean, people are so fed up, are so sick of the intellectuals of this country putting this country down, of the intellectuals of this country speaking over the people's heads, of the intellectuals of this country sneering at the people, telling them that they're worthless, telling them that they don't know what they want. They're sick of politicians with canned answers without having anything original or interesting to say. Sick of politicians that pander to special interest groups. I mean, one of the things that really excites people about Trump, and he gets huge applauses for, and he gets, and when you ask people why they like Trump, they respond, is the fact that he's not pandering to, I mean, he's pandering, but he's not pandering to interest groups, to pressure groups. He's not pandering to people's financial interests. He has the money. He doesn't need to raise money. He doesn't need to pander to all kinds of groups that want particular things. Although, in spite of all that, right, in spite of all that, Donald Trump was for ethanol subsidies because he was pandering to Iowa. So he sends these clearly mixed messages, right, mixed messages. On the one hand, he's independent of the pressure group politics of Washington. He's independent of the regular way in which politics is done. But then, you know, he's for ethanol subsidies. And of course, we'll get to his position on trade and immigration, which is the ultimate pandering. But it's not pandering to the pressure groups. It's pandering to the ultimate pressure group, not the standard pressure groups, to the ultimate pressure groups, which is the people, particularly simpler people who rally to his cause because he panders to them. A few examples of his non-PC, which I think is actually positive. Who else in politics would mention Bill Clinton's, being a philanderer, you know, sleeping around in the White House, the whole scandal that was there? Who else would mention that in the context of Hillary? I mean, it should be mentioned. This is the wife of a pathetic human being by the name of Bill Clinton, who slept with everybody, everywhere, who lied through his teeth, and she stuck with him and is still with him. And he stands up on stage with her. I mean, Bill Clinton should be an issue, and his character and her character for staying with Bill Clinton should be an issue in the campaign. And you see, the only guy who will actually raise it as an issue is Donald Trump. So he is willing to raise issues that nobody else will raise. And, you know, I'm with him on that. I'm with him on that. He was willing to ask the questions about Muslim immigration. Right? So, and I agree with him about Muslim immigration. You know, until we figure out how to screen Muslims, it's not a bad idea to stop it for a while or to slow it down or to increase and intensify the screening. He's willing to say that, politically incorrect as it may be. He's willing to say things like they are. So we're talking about all the positives. So, I've got a speech of his. So this is what he has to say about the Iranian inspections. Now, I apologize for the non-grammatical structure of the sentences and just the way he expresses himself and kind of the rambling. Think about what he's actually saying and how this appeals to most Americans. So this is about the Iran deal. And he says, and this is about this inspection regime where the Iranians get to inspect the plants themselves, right? The ridiculous nature of the whole inspection regime is again. This is Donald Trump. Then they have the 24-day inspection. But the self-inspection is the beauty. We think you're making nuclear weapons here. Well, let us go check, Mr. President. We'll check. This is the Iranians saying, right? No, sir. We're not making nuclear weapons. Nobody, no, we're not. We would never do a thing like that. Right? This is self-inspection. These are people that have deceived us, he says. They've lied to us. They're a terrorist state. But, and I used to say it's the worst deal I've ever negotiated. And of course, he's absolutely right. And he's right, and he puts it in language. He puts it in terms than an average American gets. He doesn't have some, you know, theoretical construct or something about deals and how. He actually puts it in language. He tells a story. You know, you suspect they've got nuclear weapons. You go, you ask them. Since it's self-inspection, they go and inspect it themselves. They come back and said, oh, no, we don't do that. And you can get it. You can get it, right? We, who go against the Iran deal constantly, could learn something from Trump. Now, it's not true that the self-inspections are this ridiculous and it is ridiculous as he presented. But think about as a rhetorical mechanism. This is great. See, he's showing you how pathetic the Iran deal is, and he's absolutely right. Now, his response to that is, I'd cut a better deal, is a pathetic response, right? But nobody among Republicans is going to say that. Nobody's going to call him on that. Nobody's going to go further to the right than Donald Trump, except me. I mean, I so wish I could be up on stage with these guys when they debate. I mean, it would be so much fun to be up on stage in the Republican presidential debate and take on these idiots. I don't know if somebody can arrange this. I'm willing to fly out of South Carolina to do it tonight. But imagine if you actually tested these guys, not against one another, because they're all a bunch of, you know, they're not that great. They have no principles at all. But imagine if you actually had to play them off somebody who was principled. Somebody who would say, no. You can't cut deals with Iran. There is no such thing as cutting deals with evil. You cannot negotiate with evil, and you cannot do deals with evil, Donald. The only thing to be done with Iran is to destroy their current regime. It's to cripple them so that they never are a threat to the United States. Can't negotiate with evil people. This is one of my biggest criticisms of Donald Trump, is he thinks everything is negotiable. That's not. Anyway, all right. And look, here's his shtick on Libya. Again, I think this is excellent. Again, remember the context. So this is Donald Trump. You know, the ambassador was riding in a Jeep, one of our Jeeps, of course, a military Jeep, holding the Libyan flag. And you know, freedom, 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 freedom. And then gets killed by the same people he's just freed, right? So we backed people that turned out to be far worse than Gaddafi. Look at what we did in Iraq. Look what we did in Iraq. I mean, the hell did we get? We spent $2 trillion. And that was a year and a half ago. I keep saying two or three, it's a lot more than that. I don't know what he's talking about that. We spent $2 trillion. We have thousands of deaths. And I'm not even talking other side. So, right? I mean, he's got it. He's got it. What the hell are we doing in Libya? What the hell did we do in Iraq? We spent $2 trillion for what? So one of his virtues, and again, it's a very mixed virtue because none of Donald Trump's virtues is, in my view, actually real. They all are double-sided. But one of his virtues is that he does not accept altruism, qua American foreign policy. So he would not, at least the way he expresses it, he is not going out there to build Iraq and to give them freedom and to build them sewage and so on. He wants to get something back of it, right? Now, what he wants to get back from it is a complete muddled, nonsensical. But he's not willing to engage in altruism when it comes to foreign policy. Now, he's so confused, Donald Trump is. Donald Trump is so confused that he thinks that trade equals altruism. Can't separate out. self-defense from trade. One of his many, many problems, right? So he wants to use the military, I assume, for self-defense, and he's ridiculing attempts to use the military for other purposes. But does he have a foreign policy? Have you ever heard Donald Trump actually present a coherent foreign policy? Not really. Fragments, pieces here and there, an issue raised here, an issue raised there. You know, but I'll give you another example of a positive. Again, I'm using this one speech he gave in December as a standard, because it's a long speech and I assume it's quite reflective. He says, look, we defend Japan. What do we get in return? Or he says, we defend Germany. What do we get in return? We get nothing in return. You know, he's right. I've long advocated for the United States to get out of NATO. What do we need to be defending Estonia and Germany? And why isn't Germany spending more money on its own defense? They're pretty rich. They claim they're richer than we are, right? The European model is what we should be going after. So why aren't they paying for their own defense? Why does the United States for their defense? So he's got this real spirit of pro-American foreign policy that is not going to put up with altruism in foreign policy. And that's kind of refreshing. That's kind of refreshing. Now, again, when he gets into power, if he ever wins, I don't think any of this holds. I don't think he would do any of this. So let me just say right off that anything positive I say here about his policies, which I think in foreign policy are not bad, although I don't think they're good either, because there's no principle here, and this is the big issue that we'll get to. I don't think he'd execute on any of it. Because once he has to execute, he's going to get advisors. He's going to get people who give him advice, pro or con, and he's not going to be able to live up to any of it. Is Donald Trump really going to pull the United States out of NATO? Based on what principle? Based on Donald Trump's feelings. He will never, never live up to the things that he's advocating for. He will never do the things that he is proposing. He's not capable of doing that because he has no principles. It's not that he understands that this is anti-American altruism. This is purely emotional. And emotional people don't get stuff done. Not in politics. Cannot get it done. He will be shut down. And what Donald Trump wants is to be liked. And at the end of the day, he is a deal maker. He is a pragmatist. We're going to get to this. This is his biggest flaw. He is a philosophical, unequivocal pragmatist. And as a consequence, he will fold as president. He will fold. He will not get anything done. Oh, yeah, you do get rich as a pragmatist, particularly when you manipulate the legal system for your benefit, particularly when you can manipulate bankruptcy laws for your benefit, eminent domain for your benefit. In the mixed economy that we live in today, you can get rich as a pragmatist, and many pragmatists have become rich. I would argue that there are very few businessmen who are principled, and many businessmen who are successful are pragmatists. That's the great tragedy of American business, is and they compartmentalize. You can think clearly on business terms, and then completely pragmatically and everything else. This is why you get so much cronyism. This is why you get so much lobbying. This is why you get businessmen who are pro the left, who are pro regulations, who are pro higher taxes on themselves. No, most businessmen are pragmatists. Donald Trump is the ultimate in being a pragmatist, in pragmatism. Okay, we're going to take a short break here, and then we're going to come back, take some calls, and talk more about the good, the bad, and the ugly in Donald Trump.
The Ayn Rand Institute campus is an exciting online destination offering free e-courses on Ayn Rand and her revolutionary philosophy of objectivism. Whether you recently picked up your first Rand book or have been reading her novels and nonfiction for years, ARI Campus has something for you. On campus, you'll discover a variety of multimedia courses covering Rand's literary classics, specific aspects of thought, and how to apply her ideas to your life. Get started today at campus.aynrand.org. See you on campus.
With adoring fans, rabid critics, and very few in between, why does Atlas Shrugged evoke such impassioned responses? Because it grapples with the fundamental problems of human existence and it presents radically new answers. Atlas Shrugged challenges many conventional notions about good and evil, that sex is a low animal desire, that money is the root of evil, that man is sinful by nature. One of the most prominent is the notion that selfishness is evil and self-sacrifice is good. Atlas Shrugged is a dramatization of Ayn Rand's unique vision of existence out of man's highest potential. 12 years in the writing, it is her masterwork. Rand's worldview emerges in the plot turns of this compelling mystery, centered on one question: who is John Galt? There are many legends. Which of these is true? Is he the man who discovered the Fountain of Youth? The man who found the lost city of Atlantis? A modern Prometheus? Does he even exist? And why, if no one knows the answer, does the entire world know his name? Find out the answer when you read the novel that sparked a philosophical revolution. Order it today on Amazon.com.
In 1934, Ayn Rand wrote to journalist and essayist H.L. Mencken, "Perhaps it may seem a lost cause at present, and there are those who will say that I am too late, that I can only hope to be the last fighter for a mode of thinking which has no place in the future. But I do not think so. I intend to be the first one in a new battle, which the world needs as it has never needed before. The first to answer the many too many advocates of collectivism, and answer them in a manner which will not be forgotten. Every day at ARI, we work to make sure that Ayn Rand's answer will not be forgotten. Help us. Contribute today at AynRand.org/support.
Every day we hear from political leaders that the American dream is vanishing because of rising income inequality. The rich are getting richer by rigging the system, leaving the rest of us to struggle to get by. To save the American dream, we're told that we need to fight inequality through tax hikes, wealth redistribution schemes, and a far higher minimum wage. But what if that narrative is wrong? What if the real threat to the American dream is not rising inequality, but forced equality? In their forthcoming book, Equal is Unfair, America's Misguided Fight Against Income Inequality, Don Watkins and Yaron Brook reveal that almost everything we've been taught about inequality is wrong. You'll discover why successful CEOs make so much money and why they should, how the minimum wage hurts the very people it claims to help, why claims of middle-class stagnation are a myth, and more. For more information or to pre-order the book, Equal is Unfair, visit your favorite bookseller or go to Amazon.com.
Ayn Rand was a radical thinker whose philosophical novels challenged students to reconsider their views on fundamental issues. The Fountainhead, Atlas Shrugged, and Anthem. These works have become classics of American literature that never fail to engage young people and stimulate intense classroom discussion. By offering these works for free to teachers, the Ayn Rand Institute hopes to encourage greater awareness and understanding of Rand's stimulating perspective. If you're a teacher who would like Ayn Rand's books in your classroom, visit AynRand.org. This is at no cost to you. Go to AynRand.org today.
All right, so we're talking about Donald Trump, and we're talking about what is his appeal. And I think a big part of it is just he's a straight talker. He tells it like he thinks it is. And he doesn't confuse people with principles. He doesn't confuse people with details. He doesn't get into – he has no real policies. I went to his website to try to figure out what does Donald Trump actually stand for. And nothing. I mean, there's no real policies. He's got a tax plan. Even his tax plan is very ambiguous in terms of what it actually means, and it's somewhat contradictory of some of his political statements. But he says it like it is. Here's an example. Again, a good example. Example of where I would agree with him. Right. This is about global warming. He says it's a hoax. It's a hoax. I mean, it's a money-making industry. Okay. It's a hoax, a lot of it. He's hedging a little bit, obviously. And look, I want clean air. I want clean water. I think he means goal. I want clean, clean crystal water, and I want clean air. And we can do that. But we don't have to destroy our business. We don't have to destroy our, and then he goes off and talks about China, right? So here he is. He just says global warming's a hoax. And he also points out we want clean air and clean water. But you don't have to destroy business. You don't have to destroy a whole way of life in order to achieve that. Good for Donald Trump, right? Good for Donald Trump. Does he have any proposals around this about how you clean air, how you clean water? What's the principle behind it? No. No, he goes on to China, talking about China buying our coal, and he rambles and rambles and rambles, right? So is, and I'm talking now only of the positives. We'll get to the negatives in a minute. Straight shooting, straight talker, doesn't BS his audience. He tells them like it is. He doesn't hold back. He doesn't confuse them with too much details about policy stuff. He comes across as incredibly pro-American. He doesn't believe in American sacrifice overseas. There has to be a payoff for American. He's positive. We're going to do stuff. We're going to be successful. He definitely has a vision of America's success in the future. He's definitely got an image of we're going to be great. Again, he never says what great means, but we're going to be great. He has a can-do attitude. So it appeals to that which is in America, the can-do, the let's go out, let's do it, let's be successful, let's achieve, let's make stuff, and let's make these people pay. If they're going to get values from us, they better pay for them back. And why should we defend those guys when they're not paying for it, like the Germans or the Japanese? And he's right. And you know what? Muslims are a threat, so let's deal with that threat. He's got a mixed view of ISIS. One day he wants to destroy them. One day he wants them and Assad to kill each other, and then he'll destroy them. And he's got a we'll get to his view of Putin later, but you know his view of Putin is kind of confused. See, he has no real sense of American self-interest, no real sense of that. But he has a sense of American sacrifice, and he's not willing to do it, at least at the superficial, obvious, perceptual level. And of course, at the perceptual level, that's where most people are. I mean, that's the tragedy that we live in. That's a tragedy of the world we live in. Most people at the perceptual level. Most people get, why aren't the Germans paying for their own defense? We all get that. But they don't get that his attitude towards Putin is as sacrificial as paying for the defense of Germans. All right. There's one other aspect of Trump's candidacy which is, in one respect, good. In other respects, not so good, but in one respect, good. In a sense of what it reflects about the American people. He's unapologetic about his wealth. He constantly tells people that he's a billionaire. He constantly tells people how rich he is. And yet, they vote for him. That is, in the world of envy about income inequality, in a world driven by the Bernie Sanders rhetoric, Donald Trump stands up there and says, I'm a billionaire, and I'm proud of it, and I know how to create jobs, and I'm going to use all my money to run this campaign, and I'm a real businessman. And that's good that there's still Americans who respond positively to that. Now, you know, he doesn't explain how he made the money, and, you know, we can talk about how he made the money and so on. But the fact that he's willing to, the fact that people are responding positively to his wealth is a good sign. Is a good sign. And because in the era of Bernie Sanders, you would expect people to reject that. Now, what's interesting is that people who vote for Donald Trump, if they didn't vote for Donald Trump, might vote for Bernie Sanders and buy into the rhetoric of millionaires and billionaires. That is, I read a lot of commentary that says that many people out there are torn between voting for Donald Trump or for Bernie Sanders. That's the real split, right? And look, if you look at Donald Trump buildings, if you visit his hotels, from people who live in his condos, he builds a great product, and people can see it because the buildings are, very high. You know, he wanted to build the tallest building in the in New York City, in Manhattan, years and years ago. He's ambitious, and people respond positively to that. He wants to be great, and he says he wants America to be great. All superficial, but the building he built in Chicago is a pretty beautiful building, and the hotel inside is pretty magnificent. It was supposed to be the tallest building in Chicago. It isn't, but it was supposed to be. That was the original intention, but I don't think he was approved for a tall building like that. I guess he couldn't bribe himself into getting the city government to approve that one. All right. So that's kind of the positive. Straight shooting, simple speaking, non-PC, tells it like it is, and unapologetic about his wealth. Positive in that he wants to see America great. All right. What have I missed? Anything else positive about Donald Trump that I've missed? We're going to take a call. Hi, you're on the Iran Brook Show. Who's this?
Hello. Hey, Iran, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Hi, Iran. This is Avneet. I'm calling from Canada.
Hi, Avneet. How are you?
First of all, I'm good. Well, first of all, let me thank you for changing my life. I think I learned much more from you at business school than I did from my professors in Canada. So thank you for that.
And, thank you. I appreciate that.
I just had... Yeah, so I think you're probably right. One of the reasons Donald Trump is popular is that people somehow don't think in principles. And because of that, some of the good things that he says, so they discount the fact that he's not particularly good on free speech. He doesn't understand free trade as much. But since he says some good things about, let's say, Muslim immigration, he's not bad on guns. So because of some of those things, because they're fed up of the politicians who came before him, I think he's still the front runner.
Yep. No, I think you're absolutely right. I think he's very mixed on his actual views, but he doesn't talk about a lot of stuff. He talks about only a few issues. He focuses just on the things that get him a large audience. But people are so fed up with politics as usual. People are so fed up with people not being honest with them. People saying things are not executing on it, people being dishonest with them, that they don't mind the bad ideas. They just find the fact that he's saying this stuff, the fact that he's positive, the fact that he projects a certain sense of self-esteem, they respond to that.
Also, I can't really understand why he's so opposed to China. I mean, this is just simple free trade. It's just, how can an American...
He's a deal maker, right? And he doesn't. This is his big flaw. And thanks, Anit, for calling. Because let me get into this. Let me talk a little bit about this because this is an important issue.
Thanks, sir.
One of Donald Trump's biggest issues, one of his biggest flaws, and this is to me a deadly flaw, is that Donald Trump does not understand the difference between political power and economic power. He has no. He doesn't see any difference between making a deal as a businessman with another businessman, or a businessman with a customer, or a businessman with his employees. All voluntary deals. All deals focused on voluntary transactions. And between what the government does, which is not deals. Governments don't make deals. Deal assumes, and this is really, really, really important, and this is a revealing of both the shallowness and the emptiness of Donald Trump's whole rhetoric. Deals mean voluntary transactions. Deals mean sitting across from one another and cutting a deal, negotiating a deal, win-win relationships. Government doesn't do deals. Government doesn't do deals. Free trade means free trade. It doesn't mean a deal. The problem with NAFTA is not that it's a bad deal, is that we even need a deal. If you really believe in free trade, and this will be controversial, but if you really believe in free trade, you lower your own tariffs to zero and you allow trade in. You don't negotiate. You don't sit down and deal. anytime a government sits down with anybody, it's force. It's a gun. It's not voluntary. At the end of the day, all government is a gun. What does that mean? It means it rules through coercion. The essence of government is its coercive power. So when you're sitting down and dealing with China, in the background is your ability to go to war with China. But that's ridiculous. We don't want to go to war with China. Why would you want to go to war with China? China's not a threat, a physical threat to the United States. You want to trade with China? Fine, trade with China. Cut your tariffs to zero, and ultimately they will do the same because the advantages of having zero tariffs are so huge, that everybody would mimic you. China is no threat to the United States. China is not suicidal. China could not defeat the United States in an all-out war, and China would not go to war with the United States. And what China wants is to become rich, and the way for China to become rich is to trade with the United States. And the best way to trade with the United States is to eliminate trade barriers. But Donald Trump says China manipulates its currency. Really? I mean, to me, this is the funniest thing that Donald Trump says and the dumbest, if I can say that. China manipulates its currency? Who in the world with a central bank doesn't manipulate its currencies? Isn't the whole point of having a central bank to manipulate your currency? What does the United States do when we lower interest rates or raise interest rates, or when our Treasury Secretary says the dollar's too high or the dollar's too low? And so we are the biggest manipulators of our currencies in the world because our currency is the currency of the world. We manipulate it constantly, constantly. I mean, what has the Federal Reserve did when it raised interest rates? It raised the value of the dollar. And now when it's talking about the possibility of a negative interest rate, it's lowering the value of the dollar. Hey, somebody on the chat is dissing Chinese shoes. Let me tell you, 50% of all the shoes made in the world are made in China. Almost all the shoes you are wearing are made in China. Certainly, Nike shoes like that, are made in China on some backwater like that, right? Now, currency manipulation, let's get back to that. Donald Trump keeps saying the Chinese are devaluing their currency. They're making it cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. But that's complete and utter nonsense. I mean, it's just not true. The Chinese right now are doing everything they can to keep the value of their currency high. They're doing everything that they can to keep the currency high. Chinese government stopped supporting their currency. If the Chinese stopped supporting their currency, it's pegged right now and they support the peg, the currency would plummet. The yuan is worth far less than what it is right now. So the Chinese government is actually doing exactly the opposite of what Donald Trump is saying, which is one of many examples of his complete economic ignorance. He has no knowledge of economics, no knowledge of economic principles, of economic laws, no knowledge of how an economy works. He knows how to make money for Donald Trump. He has no concept of economics, of the field, of how it works, of how it functions, creating where jobs really come from and where they don't come from. No concept of that. And he doesn't even know what the Japanese are doing right now when almost every economist on the planet knows this. This is not just me. This is common knowledge that the Japanese are doing everything in their power to hold up their currency. They actually even, the Chinese even threatened George Soros not to come after the currency because they know it's worth less than what it's pegged at. And they're afraid that George Soros, by selling yuans, will force them to devalue, and they don't want to devalue. So even on the issue of China, which he talks about nonstop, he's wrong. Now, add to that his whole conception of trade. Imagine what would happen if he raised as he's threatened to do, I've heard him say it, raise tariffs to 45% on the Chinese and Japanese goods, what would happen? I mean, the world economy would collapse. The United States economy would collapse. This was tried once before by a president who was not a politician but a businessman. Not a politician, but a businessman. It's called President Hoover. And President Hoover passed Smoot-Hawley, which was the United States. We're just going to increase tariffs because all these people, businesses is moving abroad. We're losing jobs. Same rhetoric, same exact rhetoric. And if you understand economics, you know exactly what would happen. What happened in the United States was the Great Depression. The two causes of the Great Depression were lousy fiscal monetary policy by the Federal Reserve, which we've got right now, and Smoot-Hawley, passed by Hoover, which raised tariffs. It is ridiculous. Jobs don't come here because of tariffs. Our economy would collapse without the cheap products we buy from China. Our economy would collapse without our ability to export the stuff that we export to the rest of the world, because the rest of the world would raise tariffs as a response to our raising tariffs. Now, are there problems with China? Sure, let's focus on the problems with China. Their lack of protection of IP, huge problems. We should find a way to penalize the Chinese for not protecting intellectual property. But that's not an issue of trade. That's not an issue of trade. So, and companies should do it. Companies who are not pragmatists should now go to China if they don't want to lose their IP. So if they don't respect IP, let's go after them. But tariffs of 45% would cause the global economy, you heard it here, if Donald Trump is elected and he passes these tariffs, you will get a recession far, far, far greater any recession we've experienced in our lifetime. It will be the equivalent of the Great Depression, but worse, because we're in worse shape. And he doesn't want to just do it with China. He wants to do it with Japan. He wants to raise tariffs to 45% of the Japanese. Now, Japan is trying to devalue its currency. Again, not very successful, because recently, in the last week or so, the Japanese yen has gone up in value, but they're trying to devalue their currency. Let them screw themselves. It's not bad for us to buy cheap Japanese cars. It's good for us. We have more money left over to buy other stuff, and we have more money to invest in things that they can't mimic from us. Free trade is good. Donald Trump says he's all for free trade. And then he says, but not free trade. Here we need. He says we need fair trade, not free trade. We need fair trade. That is a line out of Bernie Sanders. That is a leftist, socialist, interventionist, statist agenda. There is no such thing as fair trade. All there is free trade. And what we can do to establish free trade is eliminate tariffs on our side. So if we want another Hoover, if we want another Great Depression, all right. All right. I mean, Trump's trade agenda is right in line with that agenda. All right. We're going to take a call so I can calm down a minute so we can get to some of the more fundamental issues. Donald Trump. Hi, you're on the Iran Book Show. Who's this?
Hey, Iran. This is Corey from Minnesota. How are you?
Hey, Corey. I'm good. How about you?
Good. Great to talk to you. Thanks for taking my
call.
Thanks
for listening.
One of the things I wanted to ask, and I apologize, you may have already addressed this, I kind of just hopped on, was his position on eminent domain. I kind of was going back and forth in the chat on that a little bit. You may have touched on this, but I think I recall a time when he said that in regards to the Keystone Pipeline, that he would be okay with government basically saying, you know, we're going to just use the, we're going to take this pipeline and we're going to just, this is what we're going to do, and we're going to take over these lands just to have that pipeline in place. Now, what is your position on that, and am I wrong?
No, you're absolutely right. His position on eminent domain is it's all good. He supports the Kelo decision, which basically the Supreme Court ruled that it was okay to take a woman's home in order to build a Walmart for the public good. He supports that completely. He has, in a sense, a principled position on eminent domain. It's great. He loves eminent domain. You couldn't build anything without eminent domain. Now, my view is, and he even said that you couldn't build the pipeline, the XL pipeline, without eminent domain, something that's just not true. Almost all of the deals to bring the pipeline through have been cut with private owners without using eminent domain. And, you know, you could build roads, you can build bridges, you can build most things, almost all things, without eminent domain. It might not be the most efficient way because you might have to go around certain people's property. But eminent domain on principle, in my view, is immoral. It's wrong. It's an abuse of government power. And he has – now, some people say it's okay for roads or for something that's explicitly – what they view as a government function. But he's fine with it being broad in a sense that it's for all private means, for anything. So one of the really, really bad positions that he has, and he actually used eminent domain, he's used it many times, but one of the examples was we used it against an old lady who didn't want to sell her property to him. He was going to build a parking lot for his valet cause, for valet parking in Atlantic City. And it went to court, and the Institute for Justice, actually a great organization, actually defended her and won the case against Donald Trump. So he's actually fought this in court to be able to take people's property. Now he says, I pay for it, absolutely. And he might even pay above market prices, but that's not the point. The point is using government coercive power to force somebody to sell. And that's wrong.
And wouldn't he understand that that sets a really bad precedent? I mean, if he can do it, then Bernie Sanders can come in, just manipulate it.
But you see, this is the big issue with Donald Trump, and this is what I'm going to get to next. And thanks, Corey, for calling, and thanks for listening. Really appreciate it. Really appreciate it. This is the big thing with Donald Trump. Donald Trump cannot think in principle. He doesn't think in principle. Principles don't exist for him. He is not just a regular pragmatist. He is a philosophical pragmatist. This is why he never talks about the Constitution. He never talks about the Constitution. Constitution is a set of principles. It's a set of principles that guide, protect us from government. But he doesn't want us to have that protection because he really believes that government should be allowed to do anything, as long as Donald Trump thinks it's good for the people, as long as it's perceived to be in the public interest, as long as it's for the public good. In this sense, there's no difference between him and people like Bernie Sanders. They both believe in unlimited government. And let's be very, very clear here. Donald Trump believes in unlimited government. He does not believe in limited government, unlimited government. Now, I agree with him on some issues, like some of his foreign policy statements and a few other, but that's not the point. What makes Donald Trump objectively, unbelievably dangerous is not the specific issues that you agree or disagree, is that there is no principle. Donald Trump does not want government to be smaller, does not want government to be limited. Limited by what? The only thing that can limit government are principles, and he doesn't believe in principles. Yes, he might be, relatively speaking, as compared to Bernie Sanders, more of a free market guy. But much more important than his particular positions on any issues is his antagonism to limited government, qua limited government. His antagonism to the Constitution and to the idea of principles. Donald Trump is maybe the scariest political candidate I have ever seen, because he has combined this lack of principle, this complete lack of principle, with this amazing populist appeal, this amazing ability to draw huge audience to him. In this sense, He is much worse as a ideologically than Hillary or indeed Bernie. Bernie, you know what he stands for. He is a socialist. He's a social democrat, right? Whatever. Hillary, you know what she stands for. Power. Donald Trump presents himself as a pro-market, pro-American, pro-greatness of American candidate who's supposedly pro-free markets. And yet, he could do more to undercut all those things than any other candidate possible. Because in the name of American greatness, in the name of free markets, in the name of all these things, he is advocating for non-principle on principle, right? He's anti the Constitution while he's representing supposedly the party that's supposed to be pro-Constitution. Now, I know none of them have a pro-Constitution, really, in a sense of actually understanding the Constitution. But he doesn't even mention the Constitution because he can't. He can't mention it because he knows that he's against it. The Constitution would limit him. He is a real authoritarian. He has every instinct of an authoritarian. This is the whole deal making. This is the whole deal making. Authoritarians make deals. It's about power. It's about using your power. It's about, I've got big missiles and you don't, so you better cut me a good trade deal. This is not about freedom. There's no free trade here. There's no freedom in anything. This is about him being president, having power, and going around the world, quote, cutting deals like an authoritarian. And of course, who does he admire? Who does he admire among all world politicians? Who's the one guy he admires most? Who admires him too? Putin, Vladimir Putin. He has nothing but positive things to say about Putin. And when Putin said nice things about Donald Trump was like a little girl, so enamored with it. And when a commentator asked Donald Trump, well, what about the fact that Putin kills journalists? Donald Trump's response was, well, we kill people too. We kill people too. Putin is a thug. Putin is an authoritarian thug. He is destroying Russia. Indeed, he has destroyed Russia. Russia, which was on a path to potentially having some free markets. It's actually got a flat tax and it's got some good things. But then it's on a path, has been destroyed. Private enterprise has been destroyed and has been completely, all Russia is focused on is natural resources because the government could suck that out of Russia. Right, suck it out of the economy. And of course, now that natural resources, the commodities are plummeting, Russia's bankrupt because of Putin. Putin is the worst thing that could happen to Russia. The worst thing that could happen to Russia. But even if he was the best thing that could happen to Russia, he's a bad guy. As an American presidential candidate, you don't show all the respect to Vladimir Putin. And you don't say he kills journalists in a sense, so what, we've killed a bunch of people. That's just plain evil. And yet that was Donald Trump's response. Go look it up. Put Putin, Trump, journalist, and go check it out. So the problem with Trump, combine certain virtues, this appeal to the common man, strength, being positive, rights on certain issues, with an anti-principle, anti-intellectual, anti-ideas mentality, complete pragmatism, complete emotion-driven, and an authoritarian instinct, a strong authoritarian instinct. Donald Trump will solve this problem. Donald Trump will figure this out. Donald Trump will fill in the blank. And on so many issues, he's wrong. For anybody who believes in free markets, for anybody who believes in freedom, for anybody who believes in America, in an America's future, Donald Trump is wrong on so many issues. Ethanol subsidies. Right? You claim it's for free markets. How can he be for ethanol subsidies? The one thing I'll give credit for Ted Cruz on is that in Iowa, he was willing to say ethanol subsidies are bad. And he still won Iowa, by the way, which again suggests that the American people maybe are better than what we assume they are. He's for Kelo. He's for eminent domain. That's not a free market position. That's a horrible position. And he's more pro-eminent domain than any other Republican. By the way, if I say something good about a candidate, I'm not endorsing them. I'm not saying they're good. I say the one thing about a candidate. Cruz is good on ethanol. That doesn't mean I'm pro-Cruz. Cruz has got lots of problems. Just pointing that out. And his whole appeal, and this is, I think, crucial. His whole appeal is really scary in this sense. He has structured his appeal in the same way every fascist has structured it in human history. He structured his appeal, and this is his authoritarian instinct. This is why it's so successful. By blaming the other, foreigner, the different, for every problem we have in the United States. So think about it. He started off his campaign by blaming illegal immigrants for the crime and for the bad economy in this country. Neither statement is true, factually true. Neither statement is factually true. Now, we could argue about immigration. I don't want to get into the whole immigration thing here. But the United States has problems that are unrelated to immigration. They're related to taxes. They're related to regulations. They're related to bad trade policy, which means we have our tariffs in this country are too high. They're related to lack of freedom. That's what's hurting America. That's what's killing America is lack of freedom. And yet, if you believe, by the way, I didn't say Donald Trump was a fascist. I said Donald Trump was using fascist techniques, and he is using fascist techniques. There are a lot of problems in the United States. They all relate to lack of freedom. To focus in on immigration, to focus in as the solution for America's problems, to build a wall, even if that wall really did keep immigrants out, that wouldn't change anything in America. That wouldn't make America a better place to live. It wouldn't make America a freer place to live. It wouldn't make America less regulated. The wall would restrict immigration. And if you don't like immigration, great. That would work for you. But to place all of America's problems on that is ludicrous. It's absolutely ludicrous. But it's not just immigrants. We continue on the other. The other, by the way, is a tactic used by all fascists, right? Usually it's Jews, right? In Europe, it was always the Jews. The Jews are destroying the economy. The Jews are behind all crime. The Jews are doing this, right? Now it's not Jews. Now it's Mexicans and Chinese and Japanese, right? They're the problem. They're the problem. Somehow, trade with China is destroying America. Really? Really? And, of course, there has to be a little bit of Wall Street. The bankers are the bad guys, which is very much the case in Donald Trump's rhetoric. The bankers and Wall Street are the bad guys. This, again, he shares with Bernie Sanders. So he's using hatred of the other as one of the rallying calls. And this is scary. And it's why why his appeal and his success scares me so much. Because the fact that this is working in America today, the fact that we can scapegoat our problems, The fact that nobody, that he never mentions the idea of freedom and what freedom actually means. Because he doesn't know what freedom means. He has no concept of what freedom means. He's a deal maker. And if he has a gun to use in the deal, he's going to use the gun. This is why he is so good at manipulating government to his own needs. Right? Because he can use his politicians, which he's paid for, against your politicians. This is the kind of manipulation he can do. It's very, I would be very scared right now. I would be very scared because of his popularity. Even if he loses, I'd be very scared because what his popularity says about America. Now, I don't think Americans want authoritarianism. I don't think Americans want fascism, but what Americans are showing is a shallowness, an ability to be deceived, an ability to be manipulated that is quite striking, right? I mean, a few other issues which I think we need to talk about. Free speech. Donald Trump has been terrible on free speech. After the Garland, Texas attacks, he basically said that, like many, like Bill O'Reilly, like many others, he basically said, you know, the cartoonist asked for it. He was dumb to draw cartoons. He didn't condemn the killers. He didn't condemn the whole idea of silencing people. He didn't stand up, preach what you must and should do. And, you know, you could go on and on. You know, he talks about raising taxes on the wealthy, although if you look at his tax plan, there's nothing in there about raising taxes on the wealthy. But he talks about it. Again, it has populist kind of appeal. He talks about universal health care, but then he says it's not the government, but the government will provide to some people, but not to other people. No principles. No principles. No free market health care. Now, again, some places he says one thing, other places he says other. You know, his quote about health care, let's see if I can find his quote about health care. He says, he says, when he's asked about universal health care, he says, I'm going to take care of everybody. Notice that I'm going to take care of everybody. Government is going to take care of anybody. Think about what an expansive view of government that is. Is that different than Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton? Is this consistent with limited government? I am going to take care of everyone. I don't care if it costs me votes or not. Everyone's going to be taken care of much better than they're taken care of now. So the interviewer says the uninsured person is going to be taken care of. How? They're going to be taken care of. I would make a deal with existing hospitals to take care of people. And you know what? If this is probably, make a deal, who pays for it? Donald Trump says. The government's going to pay for it. But we're going to save so much money on the other side. Really? This is the free market guy that you guys believe in? He really stands for free markets? This is capitalism? This is freedom? This is what he says. I'm quoting Donald Trump. Now, granted, none of the candidates are good. None of the candidates are principled on everything. None of the candidates understand what free markets really mean. So we have to acknowledge that right off the start. That's why I say to you, don't be enthusiastic about any of them. None of them are saviors. None of them are free marketers. None of them are going to make America great again. Don't be enthusiastic about any of them. Look at them objectively. But to look at Trump objectively, you have to recognize anti-intellectualism, anti-ideas, anti-economics, anti-freedom views that he has. That's an objective assessment, in spite of all the good things that he says. Even the good things that he says, the way he says them, lack any kind of principle. He is appealing to what has become the dominant trait of the American voter, which is emotionalism. And that's a dominant threat in our culture. And that is unbelievably scary. Unbelievably scary. Okay, we're going to take a quick break here, and we'll be right back to kind of wrap up our discussion of Donald Trump. And I've got a couple of movie recommendations for you.
Ayn Rand was a radical thinker whose philosophical novels challenged students to reconsider their views on fundamental issues. The Fountainhead, Atlas Shrugged, and Anthem. These works have become classics of American literature that never fail to engage young people and stimulate intense classroom discussion. By offering these works for free to teachers, the Ayn Rand Institute hopes to encourage greater awareness and understanding of Rand's stimulating perspective. If you're a teacher who would like Ayn Rand's books in your classroom, visit AynRand.org. This is at no cost to you. Go to AynRand.org today.
When The Fountainhead was first published more than 70 years ago, Ayn Rand's bold literary vision and groundbreaking philosophy of individualism captured the world's attention. Initially rejected by 12 publishers as too intellectual, the novel became an instant classic and continues to provoke heated debates. What motivates a creative thinker? Is it a selfless desire to benefit mankind, a hunger for fame, fortune, and accolades, the need to prove superiority, or is it a self-sufficient drive to pursue a creative vision independent of others' needs or opinions? Ayn Rand addresses these questions through her portrayal of Howard Roark, an innovative architect who, as she puts, struggles for the integrity of his creative work against every form of social opposition. It's also the story of his love affair with a woman who seeks to defeat him. The Fountainhead is as relevant today as it was when Rand first penned it. The novel was also a personal landmark for Rand. In Howard Roark, she presented for the first time the uniquely Ayn Rand hero, man as he could be and ought to be. Order your copy today at Amazon.com.
You didn't build that. You don't pay your fair share. Who do you think you are? Ayn Rand knew exactly who you are. Rational, productive, independent. You work hard and use your own judgment. You choose your career path, your lifestyle, your values. You're living the American dream. And now you see that there are people who want to take away what you've created and will call their lust to loot a virtue. People who think the needs of others is a claim on your money, your work, your life. Well, how can you fight back? That's what they do at the Ayn Rand Institute. They look closely at public policy beyond sound bites and election cycles, at the fundamental moral ideas that frame crucial debates. They focus on reframing the issues in line with reason, egoism, and individual rights to life, liberty, property, and the pursuit of happiness. Your life, liberty, property, and the pursuit of your happiness. Stand up with them to fight against the sacrifice of your values by making a contribution today at AynRand.org/support. They'll use your money to defend your values.
Every day we hear from political leaders that the American dream is vanishing because of rising income inequality. The rich are getting richer by rigging the system, leaving the rest of us to struggle to get by. To save the American dream, we're told that we need to fight inequality through tax hikes, wealth redistribution schemes, and a far higher minimum wage. But what if that narrative is wrong? What if the real threat to the American dream is not rising inequality, but forced equality? In their forthcoming book, Equal is Unfair, America's Misguided Fight Against Income Inequality, Don Watkins and Yaron Brook reveal that almost everything we've been taught about inequality is wrong. You'll discover why successful CEOs make so much money and why they should, how the minimum wage hurts the very people it claims to help, why claims of middle-class stagnation are a myth, and more. For more information or to pre-order the book, Equal is Unfair, visit your favorite bookseller or go to Amazon.com.
Summarize, we've only got about 10 minutes for the rest of the show. Let's summarize my perspective, I think an objective perspective on Donald Trump. Lots to like about Donald Trump. He's not PC. He tells things like it is. Some of his views, he resents the idea of sacrificing Americans internationally in places like Libya and Syria. He's unapologetic about his wealth. He stands up for it, right? And he speaks a language that people understand. He really does. And once in a while, he says something that's right. But what are the negatives? I have a sense that, you know, and let me, this is a new one, which we haven't talked about yet, but I think it's important. He projects, Donald Trump projects for most people a sense of self-esteem. This is, I think, what they respond to. He's confident. He's arrogant. He stands up. He doesn't let people walk all over him. But I really do think that this is a reflection actually of a negative self-esteem. He has swagger, but it's the wrong kind of swagger. And you can see it when he's criticized. What does he do? Somebody with real self-esteem, what do they do when they're criticized? They laugh it off. They fight back. But they fight back, you know, on intellectually, honestly. What does Donald Trump do? He lashes. He lashes out. He swears. He insults. People who do that, people who insult, like he insulted Megyn Kelly, like he's insulted journalists who've asked him questions he didn't like he insults audience members who heckle him or challenge him. That's not self-esteem. That's a childish weakness. That's emotionalism 101. That's awful. I can't stand people like that. Believe me, I get heckled. And believe me, I get questions I don't like. Right? And I'm Israeli, and I'm supposed to heckle back. And I don't do it. What's his excuse? He has no excuse. He has no excuse. You can stand up for yourself, tack back, without insulting, without going to the lowest common denominator, without being a complete emotionalist. You can be passionate without being an emotionalist. Take me for an example. So, his self-esteem is shallow. His self-esteem is just a facade. He's weak. Donald Trump is weak. Again, Donald Trump is weak. Yeah, I'm psychologizing. Absolutely, I'm psychologizing. Based on evidence. People who lash back like that, I don't respect. All right. So that's one. Second, the most dominant thing about Donald Trump is his total fundamental pragmatism, his lack of any principle. And coming out of that is authoritarianism, because pragmatism leads to authoritarianism. I know how to fix this. Stupid Congress won't let me. I'll go around Congress. That's Obama. And that's what Donald Trump would do. Donald Trump would not pay attention to Congress. Executive orders? You're worried about the executive orders that Obama's passed? Donald Trump would use executive orders up the kazoo, because he doesn't believe in anything that should restrict him, except when he knows what should be done, he goes out and does it. And that's why when he's asked, I've seen interviews where he's asked, well, what are you going to do when Congress disagrees with you? He can't answer. Authoritarian fashion. So that to me is the real negatives on Trump. And then if you get into the issues, the biggest issue for me is his antagonism to free trade more than anything else. I mean, his antagonism to immigration. I mean, many of you know my position in immigration. But I thought he was very courageous in saying what he said about Muslim immigration. So that, you know, I'm actually not upset by, but his just vehement anti-immigration stand, but more importantly, his anti-trade stand and his anti-Wall Street stand and his anti-free speech stand and his pro-ethanol stand and his pro-kilo stand. If you add all those together on the issues, he's just terrible. He's just terrible. His anti-free speech stand is his unwillingness to defend the cartoonists in face of that is the one job of government. That is the one job of government. You are running for president, even if you think something is dumb. When something is dumb and somebody's trying to shoot at that something that's dumb, you defend the dumb. And you say you would defend the dumb to the end. I've heard nothing from Donald Trump to suggest that he wouldn't restrict free speech if he thought it would work better. if he thought it would work better. All right, so here's a movie that, and I can understand, this is the kind of movie that people watch, and then they go support Donald Trump, because it is, it basically shows what a scary world we live in. And in particular, it shows the evil of the drug cartels in Mexico and how that evil is coming across the border because of our open borders, or relatively open borders, however you want to call it. And that if you follow the rule of law, you can't deal with them. So you have to break the rule of law. You have to go outside of the rule of law in order to win. It's a movie, it's a relatively new movie called Sicario. It's with Emily Blunt and Benicio del Toro. Excellently made. The acting is really good. It's really suspenseful and really scary. And it really plays into these fears that we have. It's very well made. I would definitely watch it. I mean, it's very bloody, so you have to have a certain stomach for violence. So that's my one constraint. But it definitely is showing, right? It takes a mixed position. It doesn't really take a position. It shows the conflict. If you want to get rid of the violence from Mexico, the violence of the cartels, you have to go outside of the rule of law. You have to become an assassin. You have to kill indiscriminately. And you know, right? And if you stay within the rule of law, they're going to take over. Well, we know. There's no discussion of legalizing drugs, which would solve the whole problem. God forbid. You can't, right? There's none of that. But the idea is that if we don't go outside the rule of law, if we don't do these extra things, if we don't manipulate, in a sense, take over the drug cartel, I mean, there's some implication that the CIA wants to take over the drug cartels because that's the way it can control them. So it's helping some defeat others in order, because if there's only one drug cartel, there's less violence, right? But it's the idea that we're hopeless otherwise. And that I think is what motivates the Trump supporters. It's this helplessness. It's this idea that the rule of law has failed, that capitalism has failed, that the American system has failed, that the Constitution has failed. And what we need is to go outside of that. What we need is something new, something that won't be by the boundaries of the law, won't be stopped by the boundaries of the Constitution. And that, unfortunately, I think is Trump. He would not be stopped by the boundaries of the Constitution. Okay, you've been listening to the Iran Book Show. By the way, if you haven't pre-ordered, Equal is Unfair, my book that's coming out in March. You got to pre-order it. If you're listening to the show, you kind of owe me, right? You're getting a value. I'm entertaining you at the very least, pissing you off maybe, or educating, hopefully. Go pre-order Equal is Unfair. One last commercial. And if you can, pre-order a bunch of them and give them to your friends. But, you know, I can tell if you pre-order them, because when you guys go to Amazon, it goes up in the ratings in terms of sales. Go buy the book. And by the way, it's not a contribution when you buy the book. You're going to get an incredible value. You're going to get my ultimate argument against Bernie Sanders and against the whole inequality mess, the whole inequality crusaders that are out there claiming that inequality is the real problem of the day. This is my argument against Krugman, Stiglitz, Piketty, and all of them. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it on Barnes & Noble. You can get it in the local bookstore, and you can use Smile Amazon and get a donation to the AOI at the same time. Go buy Equal is Unfair, and catch me next week. I hope many of you will return next week for the Iran Brooks Show. Same time, same place. See you then.